I grew up in a fairly progressive Unitarian Universalist family, and we lived in a fairly conservative Catholic part of central Minnesota. So my life was very interesting growing up. As you might imagine, this gave me a somewhat skewed perspective on faith and justice work. Add to that the fact that I came of age during some of the peak years of the religious right, and you may not be surprised to hear that I spent much of my childhood buying into the idea that the moral issues of our time meant opposition to abortion and gay rights. It was not until high school that I began to question these assumptions about what was a moral issue. One of my required Catholic school theology classes was a semester-long course on Catholic social teaching. In that class, I learned about people like Dorothy Day, the founder of the Catholic worker movement, and Bishop Romero of El Salvador, who was killed for his work to fight for the poor and vulnerable of his country. I also learned, and was a little shocked, that I agreed with 90% of Catholic social teaching's 7 principles, which are not the same as ours, but do have some similarities. They include things like solidarity, workers' rights, caring for our planet, and a preferential option for the poor and vulnerable. And so as a teenager, I wondered, why don't we hear more about these moral issues? Why did the Catholics in my community put up billboards with these heart-wrenching messages about killing babies, rather than billboards about the number of children who went to bed hungry every night in our country? As I read through Reverend Dr. William J. Barber's recent book, The Third Reconstruction, I was particularly struck by his description of the divide and conquer tactics of the political and economic elite in our country. I thought back as I was reading to my experiences of faith and justice growing up, and I wondered if it was those same divide and conquer tactics that were being used in my home state. Was this focus on very specific issues a way in which we were being kept apart by the very forces we ought to have been working together to defeat? What would it have been like, I wondered, if my UU fellowship had worked together with the many local Catholic churches on improving conditions and wages in the factories in our town, rather than spending our time fighting about at what week an embryo could be considered a child? What kind of difference could we have made? Coming together across differences to work for a common cause is the theme of Reverend Barber's book and his work over the last 15 years. Reverend Barber is a Disciples of Christ minister from North Carolina and is one of the key founders of North Carolina's Moral Mondays movement, a fusion coalition, which Sally told us a little bit about, that rose up in the past 10 years to fight for a broad range of issues, including voting rights, workers' rights, education, and more. Reverend Barber recognized that in North Carolina and all across our country, there were these many small groups that were working on one particular issue and not actually having a lot of luck. And so he looked at these groups and wondered what might happen if these groups came together and found common cause. Could that be the movement needed to change the course of our increasingly divided political and economic reality here in the United States? And so Reverend Barber began his work to bring people together across differences of race, class, and faith to fight the oppressive powers that were harming us all. He tells this story of an early meeting exploring the possibility of working together. In December 2006, we called a meeting of potential partners for this new coalition. Representatives of 16 organizations showed up. We started with a blank sheet of butcher paper and asked each group to write the issue that they were most concerned about. And then on another sheet, we asked them to list the forces that were standing in the way of what their organization wanted. And we learned something important at that first retreat. Though our issues varied, we all recognized the same forces opposing us. What's more, we saw something that we hadn't had a space to talk about before. There were more of us than there were of them. Through this exercise, the groups in North Carolina realized that they were actually working against the same things, even though they each had different priorities. And they realized that if they worked together on those different priorities, they might actually be able to get something done. Over the next few years, these different issue groups started showing up for each other. When the NAACP was out working for voting rights, the labor unions would come to their events. When the unions were trying to negotiate a new contract, the NAACP would be right there beside them. In addition, these many seemingly disparate groups came together to create a People's Assembly with a 14-point agenda for a moral North Carolina. When asked which of these 14 points were a priority, the reply was always all of them. This coalition has had enormous success in North Carolina over the past 10 years, mobilizing thousands of people to work together across their differences for a North Carolina that really serves its people. They still have plenty of work to do, but this type of fusion coalition provides a model for the rest of us. How can we all work across our differences to build a more just and peaceful world for all? You may or may not be surprised to hear that this idea of fusion coalitions is nothing new. It was actually a fusion coalition that was at the center of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s organizing work at the time he was killed. We remember Dr. King most for his work on racial justice and civil rights, and we often forget his work to launch the Poor People's Campaign, which was launched 50 years ago this past December. Dr. King's vision for the Poor People's Campaign was a movement that united poor whites and people of color, specifically, in their common struggle for justice. Since the founding of this country, and perhaps even before that, poor whites and people of color have been the major target of the divide and conquer strategies used by white elites to stay in power. At first, this was done through the categories of free and slave. In the days of slavery, poor whites might have suffered the effects of poverty, but they at least had their liberty. Though in many ways they were exploited to nearly the same degree as slaves, poor whites actually saw themselves as having more in common with the white elites. This continued even after slavery ended through the use of racist propaganda and racial segregation. White elites knew that if working class whites and people of color ever realized that they had common cause, their numbers would be enough to take power from that white elite, to take control and change the systems that kept a few in power at the expense of the many. And so for more than 200 years, this divide and conquer strategy has kept us separate, each in our own little issue groups, working only on the one issue that we have decided is the most important. Back in the 1960s, Dr. King saw this and knew that he had to build a new kind of coalition. You'll notice that in that reading, Dr. King doesn't talk about being maladjusted to just one kind of injustice. The maladjustment he talks about is far-reaching, covering racial inequality, militarism, economic disparity, and more. With his Poor People's Campaign, Dr. King sought to unite all of those who were maladjusted to the fact that their society did not serve the majority of its people. The night before he was assassinated, Dr. King spoke about his vision for the Poor People's Campaign, hearkening back to that experience of the Israelites in Egypt. He said, "You know, whenever Pharaoh wanted to prolong the period of slavery in Egypt, he had a favorite formula for doing it. What was that? He kept the slaves fighting amongst themselves. But whenever the slaves got together, something happened in Pharaoh's court, and he could not hold the slaves in slavery. When the slaves get together, that's the beginning of getting out of slavery." Unfortunately, though the Poor People's Campaign survived for several months after Dr. King's death, it did not last long enough to create the kind of real change Dr. King imagined it could. And for the past 50 years, many of us who believe in justice have retreated back into our specific issue groups, each one believing that their issue is the key to changing our world for the better. We win these small victories for voting rights or health care, for the right to organize or for immigrant justice, for women's equality or racial equality, all the while not actually making much of a dent in the overarching systems of power and oppression in which we live. We've struggled to work together, setting aside partnerships that may have been fruitful because of disagreement on the minute points of an issue, leaving behind coalitions that are just beginning to build strength because they didn't talk enough about the environment or LGBTQ rights, or because there maybe was just a little too much God in their rhetoric. And yet, in the face of rising inequality and oppression, and we cannot deny that's what we're facing today, in the face of a country overflowing with the rhetoric of hatred and division, the truth is that we need one another now more than ever. We need to figure out how to come together across race, class, gender, sexual orientation, age, and even preferred issues if we are going to have any chance of building that world that we dream about. We, the maladjusted, need to join in solidarity with one another, finding common cause even when we cannot agree on the finer points of how we might pay for that universal health care, or what name we use for the holy. We need to come together in the struggle, recognizing that none of us are free until all of us are free. And we need to claim that moral authority that we have so long ceded to the religious right. So it is that Reverend Barber and others have started a new Poor People's Campaign, built on the vision of Dr. King and using the model of fusion coalitions that Reverend Barber has cultivated in his work in North Carolina. All fall, the leaders of this new Poor People's Campaign have been traveling the country, mobilizing leaders in every state they can, yes, even here in New Hampshire. Their vision is to unite tens of thousands of people across the country to challenge the evils of systemic racism, poverty, the war economy, ecological devastation, and the nation's distorted morality. Quite the agenda, isn't it? The first goal of this campaign is 6 weeks of mass civil disobedience, beginning in just a couple months on Mother's Day and running through June, with the goal of getting 25,000 people to participate across the country during those 6 weeks. Each week will have a different theme, bringing attention to the many issues that the new Poor People's Campaign supports. Here in New Hampshire, we've already got people organizing meetings across the state to get connected and ready for the work to come. We had just such a meeting a few weeks ago in Nashua, and people filled a room at the library, ready to get organized. Dr. King said, "It may be that the salvation of the world lies in the hands of the maladjusted," and called all of us to courageous maladjustment. When I think about what it might look like for us to be courageously maladjusted, I see two things: a dissatisfaction with the way things are, and a coming together across our differences to try to build a better future. As we approach the 50th anniversary of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination, which is less than a month away, I wonder, what would Dr. King think, looking back on our world now? How would he feel that now, 50 years later, we read his words and they are just as relevant as when he was alive? I would guess that he would call us yet again to be courageously maladjusted, to continue to live out his vision of partnership, courage, and moral outrage. He would remind us to take one step and then another and another until our vision of beloved community is realized. In this year, 50 years since the death of Dr. King, may we, the maladjusted, honor his legacy by coming together to work for freedom and justice for all. May we be creatively, courageously maladjusted. May it be so. And I invite you now to rise.